हरिः ॐ सहनावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिव सरि गौर भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
The jivas being a product, okay. On the other hand, knowledge about the material creation, which describes the material objects as different energies of the Lord, meant to be engaged in His service, is useful for spiritual advancement. Srila Prabhupada explains in Renunciation Through Wisdom, the jivas, being a product of the spiritual energy, try to exploit the material energy, but ultimately such attempts fail. Because it is impossible for one energy to always exploit and lord it over another energy. The jivas can, however, eternally serve the supreme energetic, Lord Krishna. When the jiva exploits the material energy in his endeavor to serve the Lord, that activity is transcendental. The performance of sacrifice, any other kind of activity, amounts to nothing but materialistic, fruitive work. So here Prabhupada is pointing out just a basic fact that the one energy cannot permanently exploit another. Just it's not their nature. They're always, because of the changeableness of it, because of the the unsteadiness of it, that there'll always be adjustments, always be changed, so it can never be always exploited. Right? But energy connected to the energetic, that relationship is always dynamic. That can always be there. Right? Does that make sense? So that means this taking the position as the controller and enjoyer of the material energy can't work anyway. It just doesn't work like that. Energy doesn't work like that. Right? So then here he's pointing out, therefore, then naturally you take up service to the Lord. That is eternal. So in doing it, whatever one's doing of taking advantage of the material facilities, if they are engaged in Krishna's service, it's transcendental because it's called sacrifice. Does that make sense? Yeah, makes sense? Yeah. Okay. Okay, so the idea that we could be the Lord's material energy, we can't anyway, is just the nature, right? The way things are. Yes?
Maharaji said the energy can't exploit. So if we're not engaged in service of Krishna, is it not the inferior energy, is being given the chance to exploit the superior energy?
It's been given the chance, but how much can you always exploit it? You know, when you're standing, you know, on the bridge of the Thames, thinking about how life is so useless before you jump it off, are you exploiting material energy? Or have you been exploited by it? You know what I'm saying? In other words, you're trying to lord it over, but other living entities are trying to lord it over you. So who's on the top of the pile? It's always changing. It's just like, let's say you have a pile of bugs. You know, they're always moving, or you see a beehive. They're all there and this and that. Sometimes they're inside, sometimes they're outside. So you can't, you know, who's on the top of the pile of a, you know, writhing, you know, mass of living entities trying to be God? You know, it's like king of the mountain. So can you say someone can be permanently always king of the mountain?
No, someone else is going to come and throw them off, and then they're king of the mountain, and then the next that comes throws them off, and they're king of the mountain. So that, does that make sense? You just can't do it. But service to Krishna, that you can do, whether you're king of the mountain or not. So in other words, your whatever capacity you have to exploit the material energy, then if that's engaged in the Lord's service, that's transcendental. That's sacrifice, because you're engaging your facilities for someone else's satisfaction. Is that okay? So that's where Prabhupada says, you don't have to change anything. You just have to take what you are involved in and connect that to Krishna. Right? I mean, of course, it's that simple. The difficulty is being able to do it. But it's actually that simple. Okay, we'll get to you once again.
So that's why we are dying and being born and trying, all of us changing body to exploit.
Yeah, everyone's trying to exploit.
And if we engage everything in Krishna service, we go back to nothing.
Yes, because there's no need to go through birth, death, old age, and disease, because those are there to kind of point out that maybe you're not in control. Right? But, yeah,
the implication of the statement that no energy can be supreme also applies to the material energy of exploiting living entities.
Also, compares to, yes, because at times then she is neutral. Right? Means either when you have Mahat, then she controls the living entities. But when you have Pradhan, she doesn't. You know what I'm saying? The point is energy means it's always doing one thing and doing another. It's always moving back and forth. You know what I'm saying? It's not stable in that way.
And also when a living entity goes back to the spiritual world, material energy has no.
Yeah, material energy has no, like that. But the living entities in the spiritual world, because they're always connected to Krishna, therefore, then it's always consistent. And so in that way, then also, then there can be a consistent hierarchy in devotional service. Right? So the energy can maintain a consistent spiritual status because of the connection with Krishna. But you can't maintain a consistent material status. You know, this life you're the king, next life you're a beggar, this life you're human, next life you're an animal. So it can't be maintained. But when the jiva connects to the energetic, the source of energy, that relationship is stable, is steady. Is that okay? You had something? No. Okay. This type of knowledge is called aparavidya, or material knowledge connected with the Lord. Apart from its significance on the level of proper manipulation of gross matter, the aparavidya can give valuable insights how the subtle matter controls the spirit soul. In order to become liberated from his conditioning, one should be acquainted with the apparatus and the method of his conditioning. He should know the nature of the mind, the means by which the mind conditions him, and the means by which the mind can be properly trained. To have a properly trained mind is very important, because the friendly mind can save the soul from the ocean of birth and death. Right. Okay, this quote is here. For a man, mind is the cause of bondage, and mind is the cause of liberation. Mind absorbed in sense gratification, sense objects is the cause of bondage. And mind detached from sense objects is the cause of liberation. Amrita Bindu Upanishad 2. Therefore, the mind which is always engaged in Krishna consciousness is the cause of supreme liberation. Okay. So, the point is what you're attached to is what you do. Right? So, the mind has an identity. And the mind has a goal. Therefore, there's an activity to connect those two. So if the mind's identity is mundane, its goals are mundane, the action will be mundane. If the identity is spiritual, the goals therefore will be spiritual, the action will be spiritual. Like that. So that's why it all hinges around the mind, that you're using the intelligence to control it. Therefore, the concept of just intelligence and just rules actually doesn't do the work, because you're trying to catch the mind. You're not trying to follow a rule, you're trying to catch the mind. So the process of following these rules in sadhana bhakti, that engages the mind. Right? Does that make sense? So that's why they're important. Because they can shift the mind from material attachment and engagement and attachment into spiritual engagement and attachment. Does that make sense? That's why it's useful. Right? Why do you use a knife in the kitchen? Right? Let's say I want to boil some rice, right? So I need a pot, I need water, I need the rice, I need some salt. Do I need a knife? No. Is a knife useful? Yes. But do I need to use it to boil rice? No. So when it's useful, but let's say I have to cut a potato, it's useful. So therefore, I engage things as they're useful. Material energy, it's in neutral state. You use it for Krishna, it takes you back to Godhead. You don't use it for Krishna, you got a problem. Does that make sense?
Okay, so that's the final point then, is it? Oh no, here's the final point. To have a properly trained mind is very important because the friendly mind can save the soul from the ocean of birth and death. So the idea is that you're changing it from being the controller and enjoyer of material energy, which you can't do anyway. You can do it temporarily here and there, but you can't do it consistently. But that won't give satisfaction to the soul, which is internal. So service to Krishna, that will give that. The other can't.
Speak something, sir. Some conclusion.
Now, Padma Bandhu will give a conclusion on this, then we'll continue more. Yes.
So, as Maharaj explained in one of the previous lectures, the Vedic method of presentation brings the real knowledge first, and then all the misunderstandings and speculative theories, they are explained in a second. This is done because if this is done in this sequence, that then all the improper understandings and misconceptions, they'll be viewed in the light of the proper knowledge. So following this logic, Ishupanishad starts with the invocation mantra, where it's described that the Supreme Lord is the origin of everything, and that He is the perfect and complete, and all the energies that emanates from Him, they are also perfect and complete. So, in the context of the Prabhupada's proper, these energies refer to two things. First, the material universe, it is perfect in the sense that it is completely independent, and no other units outside the universe, they need to do any extra endeavor to maintain the universe. So this is one thing. Also, the universe has its own time scale. And the jivas are perfect in a sense that they have enough intelligence so that they can understand and reconnect to the Supreme Lord. So this is the Sambandha Dhyan mantra. And we see already here, in the very beginning of Ishupanishad, that the three features of Sambandha are presented, Chitta, Chitta and Ishvara. And later on, in mantra 1-3, we see that this Sambandha Dhyan is translated into the language, we can say, of Abhideya. How this Sambandha Dhyan can be used by the living entities, and how do we apply this knowledge in our lives? So mantra one specifically describes this. According to mantra one, the Supreme Lord is the owner of everything, he pervades everything, and the other living entities, they should act with this understanding. This is explained in mantra one, and if they act to this understanding, that means that they will be liberated. This is mantra two, and if reject this Ishvasi principle, they will have to fall down. This is explained in mantra three. So mantra one to three, we see they introduce already the topic of Naishkarmya, which will be further explained later in Bhagavad Gita. We will deal with this more elaborately later. So then mantras 4 to 5, they shift to the, again, back to Sambandha, because the inconceivable characteristics of the Lord, they have to be established. So mantras 4 and 5, they establish this, that the Lord is fixed in his own abode, and at the same time he can overcome all others, running, that he walks and he doesn't walk, and that he is far away, and at the same time he is very near. And then mantras 6 to 8, they describe the unconcealable characteristics of the Lord, how that they can be only seen and understood only by the Mahabhagavata devotees. So mantras 6 to 8, they explain the vision of such devotees, how they view the world, how they view the Lord and his energies. And basically they see the Lord as they see everything systematically, Srila Prabhupada explains, systematically related to Krishna. This is their vision. They see this, only they can actually see the Lord how he's described in mantras 4 to 5. And this way of vision, it's a result of following Vishvas principle, which is described in mantras 1 to 3. And if someone doesn't follow this principle, this Ishvasi principle, then mantras 9 to 14 describe what is the result. So again we see here how Ishvasi presents first the knowledge, what is the result of following the knowledge, and then we have the anomalies, and then what is the result of following, trying to follow these anomalies in India. And then mantras 9 to 14, they present basically the different grades of non-devotees and the different unauspicious results they have to face. Mantras 9 to 11, they describe that there are different results if you cultivate knowledge and you indulge in ignorance. And then mantras 12 to 14 describe that there are also different results if someone worships the absolute truth and the relative truths. And now we'll go on with mantras 15 to 18, where we have the prayers of the devotee, because it's explained, the Acharyas explained in the commentaries that all this knowledge that is given to us can be, in Upanishad, can be realized only when there is sufficient application in the sense of achieving the mercy of the Lord.
Thank you. Okay, so in this, how he's brought this, as you see, is that you've established the Lord, right? Because that's actually the main problem that the jiva has, is who's God, right? So having established that, you've established God and his creation. Ishvashya principle establishes that. There's God, there's his creation. He's the Lord, he's the control of the creation. You follow this, it does well. You don't follow this, it doesn't do well. So now, expanding then, it says in the next group of verses, he expanded what is God, what is the nature of the jiva, what is the nature of the living entity. And if you act properly, it's transcendental, it'll be materialistic. Right? And so then, what's the attitude, therefore, of the devotee? How he can understand the Sambandha Gyan and use it properly, and then what's the attitude of the materialist and what results they get. Right? Does that make clear? So it's a very simple being presented. I mean, it appears the Upanishads can appear very complex, but actually they're quite simple. But it's just the language that's used, and that is very, very sophisticated. So then they, as pointed out here, then you establish your thesis, then you go on to explain it. You know, expand on that, so then Krishna is God and all this. Then the middle is all your activities like this. Then you're going to conclude. So very nicely that whole process of Panchanga Nyaya is being affected. Like that. So now, what he's saying here is then from 15 to 18, then the prayers of the devotee. So now we've established the position of the devotee over the non-devotee, and the worship of the Lord over not accepting that. And so someone who is in that platform, what is his, how does he behave? What is his prayer? So continue. From mantras 12 to 14, we understood that the material energy should be studied only in connection with the Lord. So that means even you want to do something, you need, let's say, some skill for an occupation to make money. But in that study, you should still see that knowledge in connection with the Lord, because it's still going to work on the Lord's principles, right, of how the material energy functions. It's not going to work on something else. So if you see it in connection with that, it becomes Krishna conscious. Right? Of course, if you concentrate, if the fruit is given, that means everything else before that, because the fruit comes only after having a focus, having a need, making an endeavor. Right? Then you get a result. So after all these aspects, then a result comes. You give the result to Krishna, all the other things are connected. So that will purify, that will uplift. But within this is because Krishna consciousness is a voluntary process. Krishna consciousness is based on actual, dynamic or active desire of the living entity to serve and please Krishna. Does that make sense? It's not a state. It's not simply a state of existence. Right? Does that make sense? It's not he is serving. It's he serves. Does that make sense? So the idea is that you are engaging the fruit, so that's an endeavor. Having gotten that the fruit is engaged, therefore naturally by being purified by that, the jnana and vairag come, one becomes more aware of the process by which you got that fruit. Right? Then that can be offered to the Lord also. Right? Because when you offer the fruit, then it's called renunciation. When the whole process is already offered, right? Because it's not actually yours to begin with, that's sannyas. Right? So the idea is the living entity comes from the platform of fruitive work to the point of renunciation, and from renunciation to sannyas. Right? Yes.
What is difference from renunciation and sannyasa?
Renunciation is it's my work, my result, but I know this result should be given to Krishna. Okay? Sannyas means the work is Krishna's, the result is Krishna's, the process, how you get it is all Krishna's. And as service to Krishna, I will engage in this activity. So the result is Krishna's before you start. Renunciation means it's Krishna's after you get it.
So sannyasis, they don't renounce action.
No. The point is, the sannyas is a mentality. So the devotee's mentality is that in dealing with material energy, yukta vairagya, is sannyas. So the principle is anybody in any position can be sannyas. But at least if they don't figure that out through their devotional activities, then minimally, at least for piety, they will at end of life take up the attitude of sannyas as a ashram. You know what I'm saying? But that's not the ideal. It's not that you holy life you go through, and then at the end of the life, then you become Krishna conscious. It's supposed to be you're Krishna conscious throughout your whole life. Does that make sense? So at least minimal, this element of sannyas is practiced by the living entity at the end of life. But ideally, if they're intelligent, they should be practicing it the whole time. Right? Sannyas isn't dealing with a result or an activity. Sannyas is that the appropriate activity that I'm engaged in according to my position is for the pleasure of Krishna, not for me. That's sacrifice. Right? That's sannyas.
But then why there is so many devotees who can act without taking actual sannyas order and become sannyasis?
How can they?
But they actually can.
They can, yeah. That's what we said. The order of sannyas is just to ensure that at some point in your life you do this. You know what I'm saying? But you're supposed to always be doing it. It's just like, is chanting 16 rounds the perfection of being absorbed in the holy name? Yes or no? Yes. What about the other 22 hours of the day? So that's more than 16 rounds. So the perfection is you always 24/7 chant Hare Krishna. If you can't do that, at least minimally chant 16 rounds every day. You know what I'm saying? So that's the point, is everyone should have the mentality of sannyas throughout their whole devotional life. But if not, at least at the end of life, one should take up that mentality. You know, let the young kids do all that stuff. Does that make sense? So sannyas is a mentality. You know what I'm saying? Does a woman have to be the biological parent of a child to have a motherly affection towards it? No.
No?
No. For some people, that is 101% correct. But if it is, then why is it the Shastra gives us seven mothers? Only one of them is the biological mother.
Why the Shastra give?
Seven kinds of mother. Right? And only one's biological. The nurse also. You don't think a person who raises the child and stays with the child all day and the parents see them for an hour or two in the evening, that nurse is not going to be attached to that child and take care of it in a parental mood? You know, the wife of the Brahmin, the wife of the king. You know, so they don't have this kind of mood. So the point is it's not necessary. But if you don't develop it there, then by having your own kid, at least there at some point, then you'll have that tolerance and appreciation of this relationship. You know what I'm saying? So the whole idea is the system is made to be foolproof. Right? You know, and we're the fools. You know? So despite us, the process still works. You know? Like that. And so if after enough lifetimes of taking sannyas, eventually it kind of becomes, well, it's okay to act in that mentality. And then one will start acting in that mentality earlier and earlier. Right? So the point is the mentality. The gopis never took sannyas as an ashram. But they're understood as the greatest sannyasis. Why? Because everything is connected to Krishna. There's no question of it being otherwise. You know what I'm saying? So that's the point. But for rasa, there is the social form. It means, in other words, the mood has to be expressed through a form. Right? So therefore, then the forms become important. You know what I'm saying? So even though the gopis are on a higher level of sannyas than, let's say, Durvasa Muni, still they respect him as a sannyasi. And he deals with them as young girls. That's rasa, right? But as far as devotional commitment, their sannyasa is much greater than his. Does that make sense? But a devotee is humble, so they don't think like that. They do think like that, Krishna leaves. put it there. Someone else has a good idea.
There's a difference between renunciation and sannyas, the same difference between nishkam, kamyoga, and bhakti.
No, nishkam karma yoga is sannyas.
But then I've heard the definition of nishkam karma yoga, you're attached to doing that activity, but you're not attached to the fruits.
Yeah, but the nishkarmya means you're giving up the fruit.
Then bhakti means that you are surrendered at the fruit and you do whatever Krishna
wants. No, that means you're performing nishkarmya with devotion. Nishkarmya gets you liberated. It's not devotional. You know what I'm saying? That is connected to Krishna, that's what makes it devotional. The potato is not devotional, it's not spiritual, but you connect it to Krishna, therefore it becomes spiritualized. Its value is its connection to Krishna. You understand? Like that? In other words, that whole process. It's not that you're necessarily attached to performing those kind of activities. Just those activities are compatible with your conditioned nature, right? They're non-different, as we were reading this morning, is that the karma connected with the body is non-different from the body. So therefore, the nature to be able to serve in that way is non-different from the conditioned nature. So if you're engaged in the conditioned nature, you automatically are engaging the abilities it has and the situations that are attributed to it. You know what I'm saying? It's more comfortable there. So to do service outside of that would not be as comfortable. You know what I'm saying? So in other words, you're starting from the position of you're starting from the position of I'm doing this because I want the result. Then I'm doing this, I want the result, but I give the result to some portion or all of it to Krishna. Then it's I am serving Krishna. I am connecting my conditioned nature to Krishna's service for his pleasure, and I'm not in any way trying to claim ownership over this result, right? And then it's I am surrendered to Krishna. Whatever Krishna wants me to do, I'll do, right? And so then whatever is available, you'll use that in Krishna's service, whether it's according to your conditioned nature or not. You understand? So it reverses. You know what I'm saying? So in other words, it's I start my position because I'm interested in my position. I start in my position because that's what I'm in. And it's I'm servant of Krishna. Then let's see what facilities I can do for what facilities I have and what I can do. Right, so that's sarva dharma. You give up everything for Krishna. Right, so it's not even engaging a conditioned nature. I'm just engaged in Krishna's service. It matches my conditioned nature. It doesn't match. It doesn't matter. I will serve. Does that make sense? You know, monkeys don't build bridges and go fight wars. Right? They sit in trees and eat fruits. Right? But, you know, Hanuman's willing to go do all that for Ramachandra. So that's that sarva dharma paritya. Right? Whatever it is that pleases, that's what he does. Is that okay? So, in other words, it might start in the beginning of the Madhya platform that you like doing the activity, but by the end, otherwise how do you have a sakti? How do you have attachment to the holy name? You know, it doesn't mention attachment to the... It's just that it's comfortable doing those things. You know what I'm saying? The husband and wife, in the beginning of life, their attachments are there based on so many needs. Right? But the end of the life, then it's companionship. It's just comfortable. Each one knows each other, knows what to do. They have a nice routine. And they can just very comfortably, without thinking about it, be engaged in Krishna's service. There's no trips. There's no nothing. It's very comfortable. You know what I'm saying? That's Dhanvana Prast. Does that make sense? So it's just the natural position that is there. But still, there's beyond that, beyond your comfortable position. So that's why then there's sannyas. But the comfortable position is in connection with Krishna, so therefore it's sacrifice. It's not. It's spiritual. But we're talking within spiritual, there's gradation. Otherwise, how do you tell the difference between Brahman, Paramatma, and Bhagavan? They're all spiritual. You have to be able to tell the difference. You know, that's the whole point, is this kind of spiritual intelligence. Because right? Material intelligence we cultivate, but you have to cultivate spiritual intelligence. You're able to discriminate between spiritual entities, because very intelligent people, material, sometimes can't tell the difference between spiritual things, because it's a different kind of intelligence. Right? Devotion comes from devotion. It doesn't come from material jnana or karma. Is that okay? Yes.
All right, when you were talking about nice karma, karmapranam, and karma yoga, is that addressing the same principle?
Yeah. Well, I mean, karma yoga simply means engaging one's activities, so that could be sakam or nishkam, like that. Technically speaking, nishkam means jnana yoga, because when karma yoga is performed without attachment to the result, it automatically is jnana yoga. Like that. So there. But technically, the activity is still being connected to the Lord. So Vaishnav jnana yoga includes karma yoga. You know, that's why that combination is called buddhi yoga. Like that. And it's given its own specific title, because otherwise they're two separate aspects. Your karmarpana is that, you know, you're giving that result, but that result can be either renunciation or sannyas. You know what I'm saying? So in other words, these topics include the whole thing, but depending upon how it's being discussed or being viewed, then we are going to view it from a particular perspective. It's the same knowledge. So depending upon that, then it will be called karma yoga, karmarpana. What was the third one you said?
Naishkarmya.
Like,
you said they reverse as well, it can be used.
Yeah.
The traditional way is that naishkarmya is the top and karma yoga is low, but in terms of renunciation, it reverses.
Yeah. So it means you're going to start doing an activity, you're going to start giving the result to Krishna, then you're going to be basically giving everything, giving yourself and all that. So depending upon so if you're looking at that, then that puts the naishkarmya is that nothing is yours is on the highest. But at the same time, naishkarmya is also has a form, a process, you know, of knowledge and renunciation. Does that make sense? Which is aimed at liberation. Right? Knowledge and renunciation is aimed at freeing yourself from the material entanglement, getting rid of sin, freeing yourself from material attachment, bringing yourself to the transcendental platform. In that way, then it reverses. Is that therefore the formal form of karma yoga, I mean of jnana yoga, or what do you call it? No, naishkarmya, then is lower. Right? And then karmarpana is that actually, it's not, because the karma yoga, and how do you say it? The naishkarmya can mean I'm just, it's my duty to do this without attachment. But it's still, it's not focused on really the giving of the result to someone. It's simply on not, the result's not mine. In other words, the first stage is the result's not mine. Then the next is the result's for someone else. Then the point is that all my action and everything, result, everything is for someone else. So that puts then karma yoga at the top. Like that. So if we're looking at as forms, then we put karma yoga below naishkarmya. But if we're looking at it in mentalities, then karma yoga is higher than there. That's why, because the point is it always reflects like that. So it's the highest here is the lowest here. You know what I'm saying? So the Vaikuntha mood in the spiritual world is considered the highest in the material world. You know, that kind of very following the rules and on reverence and all that, that's considered higher here. And the more spontaneous emotional level is considered lower, but in the spiritual world it's the opposite. So that's why in understanding the philosophy, you have to understand the form of it and the attitude of it. That's why so much of the time in application, it goes opposite. Like that. So if you understand the principles on which it's based, then you can really deal with if it's a form ideal or it's a form's not, or how's the best way of applying this principle. But that means there must be more depth and more understanding of that philosophy and its application. Right? The form is to ensure that whether there's great understanding or the mood is right or not, the form of it at least works in the devotional or social or, you know, how you say, academic or economic or sensual forum. You know what I'm saying? At least there's something's going on properly, that the human culture works. But human society is meant to become God conscious, to go back to Godhead. Right? That's what it's for. So, but at least the form of how the natural form of how a Krishna conscious devotee would live and behave and interact with others, that should be in place by rules. Because the point of those rules is to create the environment in which you can understand and practice that knowledge, so you come to the level of realization. Then you can always apply it. Does that make sense? So that's why you have this element of the forms reverse, you know, like that. Simply, it's just a matter of what you're looking at. If you're looking at it within action of the material world, then the it's one is on top. If you're looking at it compared to the spiritual world, then it reverses, because just getting out of the material world, that is just, you know, the bottom line. You know, that's one category. Then getting into the spiritual world, that has so much development. You know what I'm saying? So it's just a matter of whether you're looking at it as this or that. Right? So histories, Dharma Shastra, you know, your Artha Shastras, your Niti Shastras, Kama Shastras, they look at it from the purview of this. And how to get this to get you to that. But if you look at it from the perspective of that, then the material energy is one group. And then there's variety within the spiritual. Right? If you're looking at it from this, the variety is within the material to get to the one thing, the spiritual. Does that make sense? Because if I'm here, I look at everything here. If I'm there, I look at everything from that perspective. So that's the importance of understanding the perspectives of this, that. Right? That's the Upanishads. This, material world, that, spiritual world.
The Acharyas, they're helping us to establish that right there.
Yes, the Acharyas help us. So depending upon where we are, we'll be looking at more than this. So that's would be the form of karma yoga, especially Sakam karma yoga. Then coming to the point of the Karmarpana, you know, that I can see is, well, no, actually these results are better, more for Krishna. And then coming to the form of Naishkarmya, where I give up everything for Krishna. Right? But within that, then once one comes to that level, so then it reverses. In other words, it basically has come like that, but now it connects like this. So it's the Naishkarmya stays in its same place. It doesn't become reduced. By doing this, it's in its same position. So technically you could say within Naishkarmya, then you have these levels. But because Naishkarmya would be the lowest of these levels, you don't use those terms necessarily. Right? Because karma yoga means where all of your activities are completely connected, perfectly connected to the Lord's service. That's the highest. You wouldn't call Naishkarmya when it's actually the activity without the mentality. Karma yoga means my activity, my mood, my mentality, my desires, my interests, my excitement, my needs, my experiences, everything's connected to Krishna. While Naishkarmya means all that's not connected to Krishna, the result is connected to Krishna. And to some degree, the activity, you know, like these, it slowly, slowly it comes, because it transforms. Yeah, so then it would be what answer that. Does that make sense? So you could say it would be just like you come to the platform of prema. But prema has 10 divisions, Mahabhav being the last. Prema is actually the second stage. You know, so Naishkarmya, you could say, is technically the second stage. Because you have Sakam and Nishkam. And then that Nishkam then has all these other developments in actuality. But because you're looking at the perspective of the mood, so therefore you put Naishkarmya in the bottom and Karma Yoga on the top. You know, and Karmarpan is the transition. You know? Does that make sense? Or if you're looking at it simply to get involved and get the intelligence and discriminate and learn the rules and learn the practices, then you're going to look at, Sakam Karma Yoga and Nishkam Karma Yoga. So Karmarpana will be between those two. You know? So it's, in other words, Karmarpana is always the sundi. Right? It's always the active principles, giving up the results of your activities for someone else. Right? So sacrifice will be there. But now then, the point is that perfection is that it's not just I'm thinking like that, I'm doing it. Like Shraddha's, I'm thinking, you know, Krishna conscious looks like a better lifestyle than materialism. But having come to that, then one comes to the action of Bhajana Kriya, Sadhusanga Bhajana Kriya. You know what I'm saying? So in other words, I'm doing it for myself. The activity's for myself, and the mood of it is for myself. Right? The fruit's mine, you know, it's all mine. Karmarpana means I start to have a doubt on this. So I start thinking and technically take the thing and make it for someone else. Right? Well, the Nishkam means it's already automatically for someone else. I don't have to go through the mechanics of it. I can function in the principle of Naishkarmya. Right? I don't have to get it from the one to the other. Right? It's the same way as then from the Naishkarmya. Then it's a matter, I'm doing this for a person. Right? So that would be the Karmarpana. Then it comes to the point where it's simply being done to please that person. You know, Krishna. So that would be your karma yoga. So that's why it says the gopis, they're not big jnanis, this, that. They just engage themselves in Krishna's service. So that would be your perfection, what we're talking here of karma yoga. Is that okay? You know, and yogis and that, like Durvasa and that, they're jnana yogis. They're in jnana yoga. So there it's lower. Yes?
I am doing this for karma yoga, then what is devotion? They're
non-different. Prabhupada doesn't make a difference.
Karma yoga and devotion is not different.
What about, what's the difference between devotional service and bhakti yoga?
No.
Yeah, so it's just a different term. Like, what's the difference between nice, good, great? It's the same. They're just different synonyms. So they are naturally different synonyms, but at the same time as they can also be used in their own context. You know what I'm saying? As a form, then there's a difference. Right? But as a mood, they're not different. You know what I'm saying? If karma yoga means a mood, they're not different. If karma yoga means a form, they're different. You know what I'm saying?
In process of Shravana Kirtana, this nine process of devotional service, which one of these goes in
karma? They all can.
They all can.
You know, I'm saying as mentality. It doesn't matter. As form, then you generally take, you know, padasevanam, dasyam, archanam. These things like that, you can take that and put that in there because they have that. But at the same time, they don't. It just depends on the mentality. The whole idea is to be able to discriminate between mentalities. Because that's, we have material consciousness or material mentality, we stay here. We give up material mentality, we're not here anymore. So it's mentality is important. But because we identify with the gross body and what's connected with it, the karmic reaction is connected with it. Therefore, we need religion in the form that's connected with our conditioned nature. Because that's all we see. We don't see it in another perspective. Right? The other perspective is that it should be seen in connection with Krishna. Does that make sense? So that's why the form is there. Because technically, what's the importance of it engaging in illusion in Krishna's service? Not so important when the soul has the opportunity to gauge reality in Krishna's service. Right? The spiritual world is real. Right? What means material energy is real, but what we think it is, that's an illusion. So material existence is illusory. You know what I'm saying? So, but the point is still the method of engaging the spiritual reality in Krishna's service and the material illusion in Krishna's service works on the same formulas. Therefore, it also, if it's done in connection with Krishna, becomes devotional service. But the point is that the illusory element at one point must gradually be given up. The most important thing is it connected to Krishna. That makes it worthwhile. But in doing that, still are the attachment we have for the material, for the material energy or being involved with it, that must be given up. Right? Because if you don't give it up, how do you go to the spiritual world? You can't take it with you.
We cannot give it up unless we replace it with the spiritual.
That's there. But people do try to give it up and not replace it. Right? Just like, before you came to Krishna consciousness, you had a diet.
Diet
means a cuisine that you would eat.
Yes.
Okay? Now you've joined Krishna consciousness. What is the Krishna conscious food?
Prasadam.
Prasadam, but what particular kind of prasad? I'm talking culture.
But there is particular.
There is
particular.
How what does it look like? Give me a typical lunch menu. That's what you eat for lunch every day. Okay, that's great. That's what you cook for the deity. What do you eat?
Well, I can eat rice and dal because my teeth are not
good. Okay. So you eat only the sabji and the chapati?
Well, sabji is soft, yeah.
Okay, and then the chapati?
No.
So you just eat sabji? No. So that would be a necessity. But then other people, what do they eat? So that's my point. It's what they like. It's not a Vaishnava standard. It's what they like. So they've given up one culture, but they haven't accepted another culture, so they live in a vacuum. You know what I'm saying? So connecting it to Krishna is the essential element. So they're doing that. So therefore, that's why devotionally it goes on. And they make devotional advancement. But culturally, then, you have some difficulties. Because it's not based on a particular kind of cooking. It's not based on the principle of cooking. So what's it based on?
What pleases Krishna.
Yeah, what pleases Krishna. So that's all this there.
What does Krishna want to eat?
What does Krishna want to eat? So that's not necessarily the consideration either. In the temple, yes, but in the home, no. So you have all these different things in between. That's the meaning of the... You can try to give up material energy without accepting the spiritual. You know what I'm saying? Devotees do it all the time.
And what problem they experience?
What? You tell me. You live out there.
I don't know. I'm asking. asking, we are here to learn.
Oh, I see. Okay. Basically, then there's no common platform in which to interact. Right?
Interact with who?
The devotees. So you have didati prati grinati, guhyam akiti prichati, bungte bo jayate chaiva. You're given three options. So what we were discussing is bungte bo jayate. You take prasad with the devotees, interact, you know, like this. But if there's not a common platform of food, how do they commonly interact? You know what I'm saying? Well, one person considered food, the other person doesn't, right? So one man's food is another man's poison, right? So
if I don't like this, what the devotees take, sabji, rice, I will not take prasad with
them. Basically. And you won't invite him over to your place. So where's that forum for that association? So unless there's a lot of tolerance where, you know, you can comfortably do all that and all that. Oh, this guy's bad. Okay. Oh, well, time's finished. You understand? Guhyam akiti prichati. Okay. That means I can discuss with another and that can be confidential. But nowadays era of so-called truth, there can be no confidentiality, which means there can be no depth of relationship. So two down. Yeah. You know, so I'm saying it doesn't leave a whole lot. That's what I'm saying is you can try to get out of material energy without getting into the spiritual world. You know what I'm saying? So philosophically, devotees are doing a good job of getting out of the material world and getting into the spiritual. But culturally, no. You know what I'm saying? So therefore it becomes speculative. As the Prabhupada says, philosophy without religion is mental speculation. So when it comes to what is food, it can't be described. What is dress, it can't be described. What is activity, it can't be described. It just can't. Why? Because they don't know what it is. You know what I'm saying? Therefore it's speculation. You know what I'm saying? If we gave everybody a piece of paper and wrote down what is Vaishnava education for a child growing up in Krishna consciousness, what would be the appropriate dress, what would be the appropriate lifestyle, you hand them all in, guarantee basically as many people as are in this room, there'll be different opinions. So that means culturally there's not a common out, but philosophically and devotionally, yes. So that's the strength. But because the condition, the living entity is conditioned, generally he kind of needs this social scenario. That's what naishkarmi is. You engage your social and economic and all these different positions in Krishna's service. So if they're not common, it becomes very difficult for devotees to engage them together. And that's what's called community. So you have devotional satsang, devotional association. You just don't have community. That's it.
Why? Why there is no community? And on some places there is community and some places there is no community.
I've seen one community.
Where?
In Bombay.
Which then?
Chopati. Because they all come from the same background. They all have the same values. They're all Hindus. Practicing. They're generally all very pious Hindus. And they've taken up Krishna consciousness. They have community. They work out education for their kids. They make schools. They make hospitals. They take care of their devotees. They support each other. Someone needs to buy a house. A young man's grown up. And he needs to buy some real estate. Those devotees in real estate help him find it. He has to pay for it, but they'll find it and get it at the best price for him. You know, they'll help you, train you in how to be married and all that. They'll help take care of you while you're married and all that. You know, then nobody gets kicked out of their community because they take care of them. That's community.
What about the rest of the world?
Yes. It's a problem. It's a big problem. That's why devotees socially and emotionally are frustrated and have no trust. And many don't even actually have faith that relationships actually exist and can work. So philosophically accept the concept of God and all that, but it's a philosophy. But when push comes to shove and things don't go right for them, then they don't have faith that God is taking care. These are the social problems that we have. Why? Because the neophyte is too attached to his own culture and is unwilling to take up the Vaishnava culture. You know what I'm saying? Even he's attached to his own culture, but take it up in the mood of the Vaishnava culture. Point is you want to cook Western food, but know how to cook. Know what is cooking, the science of cooking. Know how to have a menu. Why do they have salad, right? Salad is raw food. You can't digest it. Why do you need it? Because if you eat all kinds of stuff like boiled, wheat, you get constipation. You eat salad, it will make things work. You know what I'm saying? So all these things are there in these traditions because of that. So they don't even follow that either. You know, when they eat it in a meal, when they do this, that's that. These cultures have done that because it works.
So missing education.
Yes, education is missing.
And leadership.
Yes.
So we are not guilty about
it. Okay? If that's how you want to approach it, then no, you're not guilty. But you've gotten to the essence. And so we'll end here like that. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jai Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivedanta ki, Janatai Gaur Premanandi. Just a suggestion. See, when you put it in one hand, and the problem is you go this way, or this hand, you go this way. But you put both hands, then you'll stay nice and fixed in one place, and you won't be so annoyed. You know, you won't bother everyone else, or stuff like that. You'll just be sitting there peacefully. You know, unless, of course, you can't open it. Thank you.